Well, good afternoon to all of you. It's certainly nice to be here today, and looks like we've got quite a crowd here today. That's good that we can all be here together and be with each other as brethren. We'll get into the announcements. There's really not any announcements except to say that Mr. Nance is over in Memphis today, and he says here, if you missed the Bible study last Sabbath covering Isaiah 26 and 27, I will be sending out the GoToMeeting link from the Memphis service, which will start at 2:30. And he says, have a good Sabbath. And so that seems to be all the announcements that we have today. First of all, I want to give the title of the sermon. I'm the world's worst at that. I mean, you know, just get up and start talking. But I'm reminded that I need to give it. And so today I'm going to be talking about something that we certainly would expect at this time of year. But the title of my sermon today is What's Behind Christmas? You know, it's that time of year again, and the world is celebrating one of the greatest celebrations ever known. And every year, this celebration, it just gets larger and larger. And if we were to go out into the streets, I remember Jay Leno used to go out in the streets and talk to people, ask them a silly question. And of all the answers that he would get, well, if we were to go out into the streets and ask people, why do they keep Christmas? We would probably get the same answer that we're so familiar with, because it's Jesus' birthday. And then you ask them the question then, that, okay, what if it is his birthday? Let's say it is. We don't know exactly when it is. But if you were to ask them then, what does Santa Claus and a bunch of flying reindeer have to do with it? Well, who knows what kind of answer you would get there. But I remember back to the time when I was a child and the days that would be leading up to December 25th. All the excitement that just builds in a young child's heart over this. And from time to time, you know, we would walk by the Christmas tree and just like this, we'd look and we'd see the gifts that were under the tree, and you'd always go over and look for yours. And was it the big one? You'd always look for the big one first and want your name. Nah. So you go down and yours is a lot smaller than others. It was a celebration that we never questioned. You know, there would be no reason for a little child to question that. But what about the adults? Those that sets up everything, those that wrap the gifts. Did it ever cross their minds to ask the question of why are we doing this? My parents had taught me that it was the birthday of Jesus, little baby Jesus. And we just accepted it. I mean, your parents tell you something, you accept it. That's the truth. But you know, as you grow up, you grow older, then you start thinking about things. Is this really what we're doing, is celebrating Christ's birth date? You know, it definitely is a joyous time for kids, but not so much for adults. Christmas was, and it still is, a very stressful time of the year. In a survey that was done, there's always, people are doing surveys always about something. And they go out into the streets and they do this survey of people. And 58% of them say that they spend too much on gifts and they don't have enough money. It's amazing at how much is put on credit cards so that they can stretch these payments out over the coming year. So Christmas can be a very difficult time to deal with. And many people become depressed, they get anxious, and many of them are lonely. Because they will spend what is supposed to be a great celebration, they will spend it by themselves. In 2021, the average American spent $514 on gifts. That's 2 years ago. Just 2 years. Last year, the average American spent $826 on gifts. And I was thinking about this year. What would it be? And I got the answer last night on the local news. The reporter said this year, the average American is expected to spend $975 on gifts. This year, worldwide, 1.3 trillion dollars will be spent on Christmas. 1.3 trillion dollars to have a big party. You know, back in the 60s and 70s, that's more my time, it was $10 billion. And so we see how this just continues to grow bigger and bigger and bigger every year. And it's this time of year when it seems like a spirit just takes over the lives of people. And we see a whole different demeanor in people today. What is supposed to be a joyous and happy time, sometimes it doesn't turn out that way. I'll never forget. Many years ago, my wife and I had gone to Sam's Club up here, and we made the mistake of going just before Christmas. I'll never do that again. But we were in a parking lot. We was looking for a parking space and couldn't find one, so we just keep driving round and round. Finally, someone backs out, and we pull in. Well, at the same time, on the other lane over, a car was backing out. And there were two ladies. One of them was an older lady. One of them was a younger lady. And they're in a fight to get to that parking spot. And the older woman got it. And the younger one got out and walked up to the side of the door, and she put her hands on her hip, and she's going to say something. And it's Christmas time, Christmas shopping. Well, we couldn't help but sit there and watch it because it started to rain. And she's standing there up against this door with her hands on her hip, getting wet. And then we got in the store, and people would take their shopping carts and bump you, get out of the way. It's just something that takes over people's lives. And people seem to lose control of themselves, and they do things they don't normally do. They're willing to go in deep into debt, not just into debt, but deep into debt, and spend a big part of the coming year paying all of this off. Today, I want to talk about Christmas, but I want to do it in a little different approach. I know today, all of the churches of God, whatever one it may be, ministers are standing up and they're talking about Christmas. Tomorrow morning, the television preachers, they will get up, they will be talking about it. And we've all heard sermons after sermon about Christmas. And today is no different. We've read the church's literature, we read the magazines, and we stay rather informed about what's going on now. And we can see the era of this day because God has been merciful to us and letting us see what this is all about. One of the problems that people have is they never stop to question things. There was a people in the Bible, in the book of Acts, called the Bereans. And here were a people that sat in the presence of the Apostle Paul. And they would listen to what he was saying. And they didn't just take it at his word. And I'm saying that to you. Don't take me at my word. Prove it. You've got a Bible. Prove it. But these people would go and they would listen to Paul, and then they would go and somehow or another come get the scriptures themselves, the scrolls, and they would prove it for themselves. And they were called noble for doing that. They wanted to know if what Paul was saying matched up with what was in Scripture. We read this in Acts 17. We won't turn there. But one of the big problems today with people is they never take the time to prove it. They let other people do their thinking for them. And people have become spiritually lazy. Scripturally, they have become lazy. I'll never forget visiting a man. He was in the church. He was in the hospital down in Little Rock, had every bone in his body crushed in a wreck. And we got to talking about something. And he says, oh, I don't know much about that. He says, I'll let somebody else do my thinking about that. And I thought, well, you know, if that's the way you look at it, you're in trouble because somebody else is controlling your life, your thinking. Does anyone ever ask themselves, where did this day come from? I want to start in 2 Corinthians. Because here in 2 Corinthians, Paul tells us something that we need to seriously think about. In 2 Corinthians, chapter 4 and verse 4. No, we'll start in verse 3. I'm sorry, verse 3. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 3, it says, but even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing, whose mind the God of this age has blinded. So we see here that we live in an age where it says this being, this God of this age, is Satan, that he has blinded the people's eyes. And you know, unless God opens a person's mind, they'll never understand it. Here is where we see the real problem of man. Here is the reason that man is so wrapped up in all of this celebrating, all of the merriment. And he does things he doesn't understand why. I want to go back in time. I do that a lot, and I think about this a lot. We have to go back to the beginning of something to understand it. And so I want to go back in time. How many years ago? I can't tell you how far we're going back. But there was a time when this earth was just a big chunk of rock and dirt floating around, and there was no life on it. And so there was no need for time. Until man comes on the scene, there's no such thing as time, because with God it's different. It's not like it is with us. And so we go back to a time when this earth was without any form of life. But that changed. Because man had not been created, and God had created something else to put here. He created the angelic world. Millions of angels were created. And now this creation, as I mentioned before, it was perfect in everything. And everything was in harmony up until an uprising in the angelic world. There were three great archangels, Michael, Gabriel, Lucifer. And this uprising between Lucifer and all of the other angels and God, it resulted in a great war. And it was a war that the likes of have never been seen before or since. One third of the angels. Now we're talking millions followed after Lucifer and Satan. He became Satan and the angels became demons. And it says that they went up against Michael. And we know the results of that. Let's turn to Revelation 12. In the book of Revelation, we read something here. That's going to set up what I want to bring out. In verse 9 of Revelation 12, it says, "So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world." But here's what I want to bring out. He was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. So we see here this great being that's in rebellion with God, and he's being confined to this rock that we call the earth. He's here. This is his abode. And here is the beginning of man's relationship problems with God. Because it says here that Satan deceived the whole world. You know, we read about Adam and Eve, that deception. That was just two people. But Satan has deceived the whole world. And I didn't look it up, but I'm sure that we're above 7 billion people on this earth right now. Turn to John 17. Let's just kind of tie a few scriptures together here. In John 17, here is the last Passover that Christ kept with his disciples. And he prays. He goes before God the Father and he prays to the Father. And it says here in verse 15. This is Christ's prayer. He says, "I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, us, his people, but that you should keep them from the evil one." So that tells you there the problems that we have. We're surrounded. We are surrounded by a world of evil. And the only thing that keeps us from being drug into that world is God. And so Christ says, "Look, you don't take them out. I mean, where would we go?" He says, "Keep them. I pray that you will keep them from the evil one." This is Satan's world. This is where he's confined to. And he has the freedom to do virtually anything he wants, where he wants to do it, when he wants to do it. God sets certain limits on him, but beyond that, this is his world. Now turn to the book of Job Because you know what I'm going to read here in Job. Job chapter 1. God is on his throne and he's having a discussion with the angels. And guess who shows up? Satan. Because in verse 7, it says here that, "And the Lord said to Satan, from where do you come?" So Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro on the earth, and from walking back and forth on it." You know, this was, I'm sure this was not just a simple answer. I'm sure that he was throwing out a little sarcasm here. "I've been walking the earth. I've been going to and fro." You know, it sounds like Satan had an interest in what was taking place all around this earth. All of the people. And he would probably be walking here and there. And Peter says he goes about as a roaring lion. This is not, he's not just walking around enjoying the view. Satan is up to something. And he seeks to destroy people's lives. And so he walks back and forth through this earth. And no doubt he was destroying people's lives through deception and lie. He now had rulership over this earth. And he will have it until the day when Jesus Christ returns. And he's going to take away that rulership at that point. Now, some people would argue with him that this is God's earth. This is his. You know, the Bible tells us differently. Turn to Matthew chapter 4. I can't help but stop and think about this every time I read this section of the Bible. But here we find Christ, he's fasted for 40 days. And 40 nights. And he is very, very weak physically. And now he's got this confrontation he's got to deal with. And he's going to deal with Satan. In verse 8. "Again, the devil took him up on an exceedingly high mountain and showed him all of the kingdoms of the world and all of their glory." Showing him all there is. "And he said to him," Satan is talking to Christ, and he says, "All these things I will give you if you will fall down and worship me." Here Satan reveals his hand. This is what he wants. This is what he has worked for from that time that we read about in Revelation where he's cast down to this earth, up until that point, this is what he has wanted. He has wanted the world to worship him. And he wanted Christ to worship him. He gets down to the nitty-gritty of things, and he lets it be known, that's what I want. That is what I am working towards. And this is what he has always wanted. And he's deceived the world into doing it. He has deceived the world into doing just that, worshiping him and honoring him. You know, Christ could have just said, no, I own this, but he didn't. He did not dispute the fact that, yes, this is yours. But I've come to qualify to take your place. He didn't tell him that. But that's what Christ did. And Satan is the god of this world. And he has complete control of the things that are going on in it. In John 12:31. John 12 and verse 31. Christ says something here. John 12 verse 31. It says here, now is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be cast out. Christ acknowledged who is the ruler of this age, this world. He makes it clear that Satan is the one that is in charge. These scriptures, we establish the fact that Satan is the one that is directing things that are going on here on this earth. He's the one behind it. He is the one that walks throughout the earth to and fro. It's not to say that God doesn't intervene. He certainly does for his people. And he does it for the sake of his people. But for the rest of the world, Satan has pretty much control over their lives. He controls the thinking. He controls the actions, the motives of what people do. And if it wasn't for God's Spirit, brethren, we would be probably in that group of people also. That's a lot of people to have control over. That's a lot. I want to look at one other scripture and we'll move on. I want to turn to John 8 while we're here. In John 8, we'll start in verse 42. John 8 and verse 42. Jesus said to them, if God were your Father, you would love me, for I proceed forth and come from God, nor have I come of myself, but he has sent me. Why do you not understand my speech? Because you are not able to listen to my words. You are of your father, the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks his own resources from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it. This great being. That roams this world and has lied to the people to the point that they were deceived. I read something recently that said that this is the time of the year when we lie to our children more than any other time of the year. Think about that. These little innocent people. And we lie to them. I can remember as a child, I think back to my childhood a lot. Because if we ever got caught lying, back then they had switches and they didn't mind using them on you. And I've danced many times to those switches, but it wasn't for lying. I was just being me. My parents, they would not tolerate lying. And we grew up that way. We didn't lie to our parents. And as parents, I don't know that anyone would want their children to learn to lie to. And as a parent, we never want to lie to our children. But guess what? When Christmas rolls around, we talk about this big fat man that comes down through a chimney. And how did he get there? Well, the reindeers, they're parked up here on the roof with a sleigh. You know, most of us didn't even have chimneys back then. And how did he get down? Yes, they tell them that Santa Claus is coming. And he will bring them gifts. And he goes to every house around the world in one night's time. And he's going to stop and go down the chimney and deliver gifts. Oh, you know, what we think up in the human mind. How we lie in a way that we don't even recognize ourselves. We teach our children that Christmas is the birthday of Jesus. And all of this goes against the teachings of the Bible. You can prove it takes study, it takes a little diligence, but you can prove that Christ was not born on December 25th. You have to know what you're looking for. Matthew 19. Turn to Matthew 19. Matthew 19 and verse 18. Christ is speaking to this young rich man, and he says to him, which ones? I mean, he tells him he has to keep the commandments, and he said, which ones? And Christ tells him, you shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness. You shall not lie to anyone. And yet we so easily tell a child all of these things. What a shame. Right here in verse 44, it tells us that we should not lie to our children or to anyone. When men established their tradition of worship, who do you think was causing them to think about all of this? The very one that has deceived the world. Mark chapter 7. Mark chapter 7. And we'll read verses 6 through 9. It says here, he answered and said to them, well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites, as it is written, the people honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Oh, we talk about Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. But he says, with their lips, they profess, but with their heart. And it says, verse 7, and in vain they worship me, teaching the doctrines, the commandments of men. For laying aside the commandments of God, you hold the traditions of men. And Christmas is a tradition of men, of man. The washing of pitchers, the cups, and many other things you do. And he said to them, all too well, you reject the commandments of God that you may keep your traditions. Man will do anything to hang on to his traditions. Now let's go back to John chapter 4. John chapter 4 and verse 22. Here Christ is passing through Samaria. And we won't go there, but it's interesting to study what happened in Samaria. The people there worship two gods. They tried to worship Christ, but they had their gods that they still worshiped. And in verse 20, we'll start in verse 19. The woman said to him, there was this lady at the well. You're familiar with that. And it says here, the woman said to him, sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshiped on this mountain, and you Jews say that in Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship. And Jesus said to her, woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. And you know that hasn't changed to this day. People worship what they think is God. And he says, you don't even begin to know what you're worshiping. These words have never been more true than today. People don't know the origins of the things that they worship. And you know, Israel has never, since they came out of Egypt, they have never been satisfied with their God. They proved it rather handily when they came out. And when they went into the promised land, they denied the true God. And they sought after all of these other gods, the people around them were worshiping. Turn to Jeremiah. In the book of Jeremiah, we read something here that is truly, truly a sad thing. Jeremiah chapter 2, and we'll begin in verse 4. Jeremiah 2 and verse 4 says, hear the word of the Lord, O house of Jacob, and all the families of the house of Israel, says the Lord. What injustice have your fathers found in me, that they have gone far from me and have followed idols and have become idolaters? And then let's look, drop down to verse 9. Therefore, I will yet bring charges against you, says the Lord, and against your children's children. And I will bring charges for pass beyond the coast of Cyprus and sea. Send to Kedar and consider diligently and see if there has been such a thing. Here is where Israel, they turned away from God. It says, has a nation changed its God, which are not gods, But my people have changed their glory, and God is their glory. For what does not profit? We have turned away from our God and traded him in for something else that's of no profit, of no use. We have thrown away the glory of Israel. And we've settled for things that won't hold water. All of these stories about Santa Claus, reindeers, and things like that. And then you go to Easter, and it's a bunny and it's eggs. They don't hold up under the truth. Israel, they were always seeking a different way to worship their God. And idol worship has never been such a problem that Israel has. This has been their problem from the day they came out of Egypt. Solomon, one of the wisest men other than Christ, that's so looked up to by all of us. We look up to Solomon. And in his latter days, he turned to these false gods. Not only him, but many, many others. So many. Israel has always worshipped anything that has been created. Turn to Deuteronomy 4. Deuteronomy chapter 4. And verse 19. Moses is talking to them. And he says, "And take heed lest you lift your eyes to heaven, and when you see the sun, the moon, and the stars, and all of the hosts of heaven, you feel driven to worship them and serve them." Moses was a tremendous person that saw the future. He saw what was lying ahead of him. And he warned them. He says, "Don't you do it." And guess what? They did it. They did it. I want to read you something. You can find this in the Encyclopedia Britannica. This is not from the church. This is from just an encyclopedia. December 25th was first identified as the date of Jesus' birth. And in the year 221 and later became the universally accepted date. One explanation of the origin of this date is that December 25th was the Christianizing of the Dies Solo Invicti Nati. That's Roman. I looked it up on computers to see how you pronounced all these words, and they'll do it for you. But it means the day of the birth of the unconquered Son. The Saturnalia, a Roman festival where they worshiped the Son. And it was December 25th. Isn't that interesting? It was a very popular holiday that was celebrated on the winter solstice. I think it was not yesterday, but day before that on the local news, they mentioned, hey, this is the winter solstice. And it was a symbol of the resurgence of the sun. You see the sun, we come to the shortest day of the year. They worshiped the sun and they thought he was dying. And so they have the big celebrations and try to make him come back. And sure enough, the days start getting longer. That's pretty much what that holiday was. It was the resurgence of the sun, the casting away of winter, and the heralding of the rebirth of spring and summer. Indeed, after December 25th had become widely accepted as the date of Jesus' birth, Christian writers frequently made the connection between the rebirth of the sun, S-U-N, and the birth of the S-O-N. One of the difficulties with this view is that it suggests a nonchalant willingness on part of the Christian church to appropriate a pagan festival. So we see there how we got Christmas on the 25th. From the Biblical Archaeology Society, here's an article that they wrote. The most loudly touted theory about the origins of Christmas dates is that it was borrowed from pagan celebrations. The Romans had their midwinter Saturnalia festival in late December. Barbarian people of northern and western Europe kept holidays at similar times. To top it off, in 274 CE, the Roman Emperor Aurelian established a feast of the birth of the unconquered sun on December 25th, Christmas. The argument goes, is really a spinoff from these pagan solar festivals. Moses says, don't look at the sun, moon, and stars and worship. According to this theory, early Christians deliberately chose these dates to encourage the spread of Christmas and Christianity throughout the Roman world. If Christmas looked like a pagan holiday, more pagans would be open to both the holiday and the God whose birth it celebrated, the sun, S-U-N. Brethren, this day it will be kept shortly is a deception that has been placed upon man. Satan did it. His whole purpose when he went before Christ at the temptation there in Matthew, it was to get Christ to worship him. And Christ would not do it. But he has deceived the world. And the world will do it. And they do. The day that we call Christmas is not the sweet and innocent day that it appears to be. Satan has deceived the world just as he did Adam and Eve. And he has achieved his goal of the world worshiping him. It has nothing
to do with the worship of God, the Creator.